This episode of Worst Ever Podcast brought to you by Daily Harvest.
Daily Harvest. You know, we've all seen a mouth-watering healthy smoothie or acai bowl. I can never say that word right.
You said it. I think you said it right.
On Instagram or on Pinterest, have you seen those?
I've seen them.
Yeah, well.
Have you ever had one? They're delicious.
Delicious. That's the kind of thing I should be eating all the time, right?
That's the only thing you should be eating from here on out.
But who has time to make that every single day? Wouldn't it be great if you could just, you know, have picture perfect nutrients without having to hit the farmer's market and chop up all the vegetables or the fruits? Now you can get all your superfoods super fast with Daily Harvest.
The thing I like about it is that the produce is organic.
Yes.
Number one, it's unrefined. It looks amazing. It tastes amazing. You can see all of the whole ingredients when you open the cup.
Well, here's my favorite part about it is preparing each cup is insanely easy. You know, you just add water, or if you're feeling fancy, you can substitute other liquids like coconut oil or milk, coconut milk.
Almond milk. You know what? It's almost like your cake in a cup, but actually healthy.
All right. Take it easy.
Go to daily-harvest.com, enter promo code WORST to get 3 items for free off your first box. That's promo code WORST for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. That's daily-harvest.com. The worst moments of our life.
Hey, girl. Hey, that's bad.
So speaking of like worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
And we feel the pain is best served funny.
Welcome to Worst Ever. Hey, you guys, welcome to Worst Ever Podcast. Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast. This is your host, Alaa Khalid.
I'm Christine Lakin.
Welcome, Christine. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for coming.
No, thank you for coming.
Guys, this is a very special podcast because not only do we have the lovely, the infamous Stacey Keenan back, but we're actually podcasting from her beautiful home.
Yes, and she brought snacks.
There's
and
snacks.
Rosé.
There's rosé. There's always, it's just, when you come over here, it is, you're going to be wined and dined. So
yeah, we're having dinner.
Don't tell the people that. They're going to feel bad that they weren't invited. But we are.
Fine.
We are having dinner and it smells really good. So
well,
just going to say that.
Thanks so much,
Stacey,
for having me.
Welcome.
Back. Thank you. I loved being on the show last time. I loved it. And then I told Christine I want to be on every episode for the rest of the show.
If as you could just
I don't know, like a permanent sidekick or third person or something.
If you just quit your other high power job, then we would love to have you. But I don't feel like that could be possible.
And if anyone hears crunching or anything, I'm eating either popcorn or chips or an olive.
Just move the microphone away from your crunching. Gross.
That was really good.
I just want to talk for a second about Stacey's beautiful home.
Yep.
Because I've always loved this house so much. And it's such like a haunted-y sort of... It's so eclectic and beautiful, and the artwork is so interesting. I mean, it's a far cry from the Aztec dog-filled, dog-haired carpet of, you know, where I live.
Well, your own fabulous house is getting more fabulous sized.
Let's hope if we ever move in. Let's hope. More updates on that later.
Okay, good. We need an update because I think we're coming up on a year, right?
It's getting there. Yeah.
Well, I told you it was going to take longer than a year.
We're hoping it's going to be like February. But at this point, honestly, when they started in January, they didn't really get the permits to demo until January. So really, January is a year. So I don't feel horrible about it. But
it's the Lake and Mahal.
Yeah, it's becoming.
At this point.
Things are just happening and it's really becoming an issue. But alas.
How long have you lived in this house?
First thoughts. Yeah.
Over 20 years. I bought the house when I was 18. It was the summer after graduating from high school that I started looking, and my mom was not into it. You know, she was like, you should rent first. You don't know, you have no idea what it takes to take care of a house, to maintain a house, to do all the stuff, which was completely true. And she was absolutely right about that. And it was a long process of learning. So I looked for about 6 months. I looked on the valley side and then I looked on this side. And I saw this house. I came with one of my friends from high school who was with me looking that day, and the realtor pulled up and I saw this one and I said, is it this one? And she goes, no, it's that one. And she pointed to the house next door, the one to the right. And I was like, oh, okay, because as soon as I saw this house, I loved it. And then we walked up and it was this one. And then we came inside and I was like, all right, this is it. I think this is the one, you know, it's just that thing. It's like, it's the one, even though, you know, I had things that I wanted to have a view and I wanted 3 bedrooms because this house is very tiny. And it does not have a view. The only thing it had that I really wanted was a big yard, and it does have a big yard, but I was like, well, whatever. Like this is it.
When you know, you know.
No, I love that she's like, so casually saying, you know, my high school friend and I, let's go buy a house. Yeah. Like that's
when you
just
work when you work from the time you are 4 or whatever, then, you know, your trajectory is just a little different.
So, well, and we never had a house. We always had, I mean, when I was really little, we had houses. And then for the rest of my life, it was just a series of these nightmare apartments and the white walls. I hated the goddamn white walls and the popcorn ceiling once we came out to the West Coast.
Right.
The Time magazine
shitty apartments. Yeah. And the first thing I wanted was to have a house. Like, I just couldn't.
See, I have no desire to have a house. I want to live in it. I want to live like the Jeffersons, in a penthouse in the sky with a concierge.
You actually want to live in a
Yorker.
Hotel.
You're a New Yorker.
Yeah, I would live in a hotel in a heartbeat. In the 80s, a lot of celebrities lived at like the Hilton Universal.
I would do that.
I don't want to deal. I don't want to deal with yards. I don't want to deal with plumbing. I don't want to deal with property taxes. I don't want to deal with any of that stuff.
Yeah, it is a lot.
It is a lot. All they do all day, houses, is as soon as you leave, they're like, I have nothing to do. What should I do all day? I know. I'll sit here and think of ways to spend money.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, I know. Maybe it's the foundation. You know, something really super expensive that fixing it provides no aesthetic benefit whatsoever. How about that? That sounds fun. How about, new roof. I'm feeling a new roof now. That's all they do all day is sit there and scheme.
Yeah.
So were you here during the Northridge earthquake?
Well, okay. So the first night that I spent alone in the house was the night of the earthquake.
Shut up. So
yes, it was,
I didn't know that.
First night away from home. First night here by myself. The house is unfurnished. It's just basically like me and a nightgown.
We're kindred spirits.
God. You really are.
My second night in LA in an empty apartment in West Hollywood. In a sleeping bag because my friend, we just moved out here. He hadn't gotten furniture yet. Was Northridge earthquake.
Oh my God. So what, okay. What did you do?
I moved here from Florida. So I thought, and I'm not exaggerating. I thought we were having nuclear war. I thought it was World War III because from the windows,
the noise, people, it's so loud. Hard to explain the noise.
And the window, and you could see the transformers blowing up, but I didn't know there were transformers blowing up. I literally thought we were under attack.
What was it like here?
Here had to be.
So it sounded like it was so loud. You know, it's just, I don't know, if you've never been through an earthquake, how do you explain what it sounds like when the earth beneath you is moving and everything like on it is like, there's the tablecloth is being lifted off the table and everything is just getting thrown around and shaken up. It sounded like wood splitting. It sounded like, you know, Paul Bunyan or somebody taking a really huge branch and cracking it over his knee, except the sound just went on and on and on. So, I mean, the house, you can see from the outside, it's a wooden house. Everything is wood. So I thought, oh, well, the house is just kind of splintering into smithereens must be what that sound is.
Right.
It did come off of the foundation, so that was exciting. It had never been attached to the foundation in the first place. It was built in 1933 and it was never retrofitted. So it just shook a few inches off of the slab. And then it was pitch darkness. And at the time, I've gotten over this since, but at the time I was still afraid of the dark. And I just remember standing at the top of the stairs, looking down the stairs, and it was like looking into a well. I mean, you could not see your hand in front of your face, and I was so afraid of the dark. And I had nothing here. I was wearing this like nightgown. I don't have shoes. I don't even know if I had shoes, but whatever. There was just nothing. There was no flashlight. There was no. There was just nothing.
No, you literally
here.
Just moved in.
Like I brought like a toothbrush or something. Yeah, because you know I was at my mom's house, so there was no rush for me to. There was no like van that pulled up with all the stuff. I was just like, hey, you know, I'll. It's time for me to start staying at the house. You know, so I just had my stuff at my mom's and came
Do
over.
Do you know at the time it's an earthquake?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that's the realize only thing I didn't know what it was.
Because you'd been in one before,
there was
but not
the big
as extreme.
One, there was one in the 80s that I was here for that was mm-hmm. pretty big. Yeah. So, yeah, I knew. So, yeah, I just had to, I remember just having to force myself down those stairs into that dark and just, it was, I just hated it. And then just running out into the street. And I remember seeing a guy running up and down this street out here. It's in the hills here. And he had one of those red, like long johns that has the trap door with the button.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love
that
things.
Little trap door on the butt.
I love those
I don't know.
Things.
He was just wearing that and like no shoes. And he had like a candle or something.
Well,
and he was just running like a maniac.
It was January, so it was cold. So he was probably sleeping, you know, snugly.
I guess. And so then, so I jumped into my car because I knew, because the phones weren't working. And my mom, you know, I knew my mom was going to drive here.
Right.
If she didn't know like what was going on, she was going to drive over here and she hated to drive in the dark and she was scared to drive in the dark. So I was like, I just have to go there. And I remember driving on Mulholland because there's only two ways out of here and one of them is Mulholland. And there was just, there were boulders all in, like in the road. There were rocks still coming down.
Oh my God.
And then the light at Mulholland and Laurel Canyon, all of the lights were out and people weren't even stopping. People were just hysterical. They were just driving through the intersection, no stop. Just, it was like pandemonium.
This must be why they tell people your instinct during an earthquake is to run outside.
And
they tell people not to, I think because of two things, power lines, A, and trees, things like falling on you, and B, probably people in their cars who were just like freaking out and driving away and not adhering to any kind of law at all.
Fight or flight, just like complete unreasoned driving. Did you stay where you were?
Well, okay, so here's, I mean, the audience has heard this before, but I have to tell Stacey. So our cars were being delivered that day from Florida. We had them on a truck. Because I moved out here with like the Mouseketeers. They had just wrapped their show.
As you do.
Right? As you do.
So we're like, we shipped our cars from Orlando and they were coming that day. So we're after the initial thing, we're in our underwear, we're outside, we're talking to the neighbors, we're like, what the hell? I was like, is that normal? They're like, no, we haven't felt anything like that in 10 years. I'm like, okay, you know, but I called my mom and dad right away. I said, turn on CNN. We had an earthquake, but I'm fine, you know, so don't worry. So later that day, we get a call from the truck driver, or the night before we got a call from the truck driver saying, I'll be at this place at blah, blah, blah time. So we had one car here. We had two to go pick up. So we're driving down Melrose. Now, mind you, the 10 freeways collapsed. Like, all kinds of shit is going on. And we're, like, going, I guess it's okay to go. And, like, we see people looting on Melrose. And we're, like, going, what's going on? And people are, like, get off the roads. Cops are, like, no. You know, they're trying to stop you from, like, driving and stuff. And we're, like, we got to pick up our cars, you know. And then we realized we didn't have groceries. Because we had just been there 2 days. So we didn't have like rations for like, you know, because we were eating at like Ed DeBevick's and like, you know,
Bob's,
you know, like, yeah, we're like eating at like random Hollywood spots, you know. So we're like, oh, we don't have groceries. So we're like, we should probably go shopping and get stuff. There's nothing is open. The valley's on fire, right? Literally, there's one place that's open in all of LA, and it was the hot dog
Pink's.
Stand across from
Papoose.
No, across from Bob's Big Boy in Burbank.
Papoose hot dog stand.
That's
what it was called.
It's not that
anymore. It's a new mommy burger now.
Okay.
Gentrification.
Anyway, so yeah. So this lasted through the earthquake. So I guess that's why you had to get some things done here, right?
Yeah.
Is that what prompted the whole foundation?
Well, yeah. So then the foundation had to be, you know, the house had to be picked up and put on the foundation and then retrofitted and bolted to the foundation. And I forget what they call it, where they do something in the corners that,
yes,
you know, I guess whatever helps it stay on the foundation. And
Did
it was
you
just
have
a huge
any deal. Idea when you bought the house, though, that it wasn't actually affixed to the foundation?
No.
And could you, was that like, hey, no one disclosed this fact?
But it's the 90s, guys. So, like, those are probably laws, and you would know, because you're a prosecuting attorney. I'm sure that they were, like, very lax at that time, right?
You know, I if I recall, there was something in the purchase, you know, contract or the deed or whatever that basically said as is. Like, you've had the chance to get it inspected if you want. You've had your inspection.
Right.
You know, whatever came up in the inspection, you've had the previous owner, you know, deal with it, and you've, both of you have gone back and forth, and now you're, both sides are saying as is. So
it's
true. That's how I remember it, that it was kind of like, well, but then that's it is as it is. Then.
That's hard, because you're not going to get an inspector to literally dig under your house and see whether it's affixed to the foundation. That's just sort of a given that it would be.
But if you're getting earthquake insurance, I'm sure you have to have it.
I don't even think back then they...
I don't remember there being any kind of inspection like that. But then FEMA came out afterwards because the whole... This fireplace that you're looking at here, it couldn't be used. It was all cracked up on the inside from the earthquake. And they came out and inspected it and paid for it. And then I didn't get it fixed, which is so stupid. Like, only an 18-year-old would be like, oh, okay, I got this money from FEMA, I'll just do it later. And then I didn't do it later.
And now you can't do it.
Well, I can do it. It's just a matter of, you know, getting it done. But yeah,
you haven't done it.
No, it's still cracked. It's still cracked.
You should do it, because you know in California you cannot put in a wood burning fireplace anymore. If it's original with the house, you can have it fixed and it can stay. But because of emissions and because of all this green code, like for my house, for instance, we had a wood burning, and then I ended up taking it out, and I could never put a new one in now.
Oh, you're kidding.
No,
I didn't know.
And for my house, like, I think the way we restructured it, like, it's fine, but this is so cozy in here.
See, in my penthouse, I would have the flat screen with the fire on it.
Of course
the permanent fire.
Yeah. That's what I would have. So wait, so what year is this house built?
Well, there's controversy over that.
It's always a scandal.
It was either built in 1933, which is what it says officially, but then when they were doing the foundation work, they said they found something that said 1911.
What?
And then they covered it. They never, I mean, in those days, no one was walking around with a cell phone that had a camera. They didn't, they were like, oh yeah, you know, they didn't wait for me to come see it. No one took a picture of it. They just said that they found that, and then they covered it again. So I don't know if that's true, but officially it's 1933. It could be older though. But I mean, haunted house was the design theme from the beginning, because the house is haunted. There's no question about that.
I
and I decided to just like not fight it. And in fact, just kind of run towards it. It's gotten toned down over the years.
The ghosts anymore.
Well, they're here. Yeah. They're here no matter what.
Do you believe in past lives?
In terms of all of us having had previous lives? I think it's arrogant for humankind to say that just because we don't understand something or we don't understand it now, therefore it can't be possible. So, I mean, I don't, maybe.
Because for some reason, like when I walked in and you walked out, like I was like going, oh, this is Stacy. Like this, like you seem very 1930. Like I feel like you were, I feel like you were in this like decade. Like you were at some point, I mean, physically, everything about you, and then I walk in the house, I'm like going, oh my God, this just makes sense. You know, the fabric is freaking me out behind you. Like I'm in love with this, the peacocks.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
It's like, I can see, I could totally see like a gown made out of this. And it's like, so where's this from?
This is unromantically from Anthropology.
Is it really?
Wait.
Yes.
Look at you. We'll take a picture of that so people can see.
Yeah, but the ghosts are here. They've been kind of quiet for a while, but when I first moved in, you can all see, those of you who are here, for those of you who aren't, there are three arched glass French doors in this living room. And they have these kind of closures to them where it's a metal knob, and then the knob works these long, like a rod, and then the rod goes down into a notch in the floor, and then it goes up into a notch in whatever the door frame or whatever right. is above it. So when you turn that knob, that rod, you know, if you turn it to open it, it comes out of those notches and you can open the door. And then when you turn it again to close it, the notches go up and it locks the door because the, you know, the rods slide in. Anyway.
Right.
So I would come down in the morning and all of these doors would be open, which is weird because you have to turn that knob all the way and pull it, you know, twist it and then pull it from the inside and pull it in into the room in order to open these doors. And every single morning, all three of these would be standing wide open. You know, I would come down and be like, oh my God, why is it so cold in here? Because this house, like when you come in the summer, it feels like the air conditioning is on. It's always freezing in here. And in the winter, it is really, really cold. And I would come down and be like, God, why is it so cold? And then you'd come into this room and all of these doors would just be
every morning.
It was a long time that this happened.
And that happened right when you moved in?
Right. So that was an ongoing thing. And then,
oh my God,
there would be times of like, and it was always when I was upstairs in the bathroom. I don't know. It's a tiny house. There's only one bathroom, but the bathroom, there's something about that bathroom. There's something that happens, but you know, I would be up there like washing my face and all of a sudden I'd be like, it would sound like there was a house full of people. The chairs, when we have dinner, you'll see that there's a marble floor in the dining room. It's like these old unpolished marble tiles. And when you pull the chairs out, it goes, it's like the wood like squeaking on these marble tiles. And it's a distinctive sound and it's kind of loud. And so it would just sound like there were six people downstairs. You'd hear the chairs, you know, getting pulled out and you'd hear the kitchen cabinets, the old ones, they make this like kind of, you know, their own sound when you open and close them. And you would just hear people walking around. You'd hear people walking down here, like this floor, if you can hear it, yeah. It sounds like it's kind of hollow underneath. And you right. would just, and then you'd hear people walking on the stairs and it would just be like, and you're standing there going, I can't believe there's no way that this is happening, but it is absolutely happening. It's happening right now. And you're just standing there and your face just gets red and your just heart is pounding.
And you're living alone.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I don't know. There's
now, what do
I'm
I
not
do?
Imagining this. Like right. it's actually happening.
I just paid to have the foundation fixed. And now there's a bunch of ghosts living here. Like shit, I can't move.
Yeah.
I mean, you not get a roommate at that point? I mean,
I did have roommates. Yeah. Yeah. One of my high school friends lived here. Yeah. And then Devin Odessa, who we talked about last time, she and I lived together here for a while. But it's always when you're by yourself. So you can't verify with somebody else. But
why did you stay? I would freak out. I'd be like, I'm done.
They never did anything bad. It's just that they were here. And I mean, it kind of came to a head another time. And again, I was in the bathroom. I'm washing my face. And it's that kind of horror movie thing where you're afraid to look in the mirror. Like you think something's going to be behind you or something. So I'm washing my face and it starts again. And it's this... you know, it's the chairs and the people and not people talking, but just like people moving, just being here, just living their life here. And it's the whole, and you know, with the red face right. and the heart pounding of just like, I can't believe this is happening. And then the door was open to the bathroom, into the hallway. And I saw something go by. It was dark and it was maybe like not even waist high. And it just flew by. Just whoosh, just super fast.
You have little people ghosts?
I don't know what it was. It was just dark. It could have just been like a just that, not all the way like a whole figure, maybe just like an orb. I don't know. It was just out of the corner of my eye, but I definitely saw it and it was dark and it just went faster than you could. No person could move that fast. It was just like whoosh. So I said, and the noise was still going and the people and all the sound of all the, just the full house. And so I just said in my mind to, you know, whoever or whatever it is, I said, you know, this is just too much for me. Like, I don't want to see you and this is scary and you're scaring me and it's just too much. Can we just like tone it down? And I was like, all right, that's it. I'm just going to put that out there. And then I closed my eyes and now I was washing like my whole face and I use like soap, you know, so I have my eyes closed and I feel something just... touch my neck right here. Not hard, not like a poke, but it's like somebody put like their index finger and just touched your neck like that. And then it went away and then everything stopped. Like all the noises stopped. And that's really the last episode that there's ever been here. And that was a while ago.
Whoa.
Stacey, whoa. What are you doing here still? Like, why am I here right now? Like, what the hell?
Well, you'll have to see. Wow. I mean, there's a couple that we're friends with, but when they're here, he makes his wife go to the bathroom with him. He's afraid of that bathroom.
Before you told him these stories?
Yes. Yeah.
He has a sense in that bathroom.
He's just scared to
be in
there.
Have you had like a medium or anyone come into this house?
You know, there was one friend of Guy's, my husband Guy, who was, yeah, he was like a medium kind of guy. And he's found all kinds of people in here. I mean, I don't know if that's true. Like there was a kid in the bedroom, the guest bedroom, which is our office now. There was like and that was like the worst energy was up there. I don't think he found anything in the bathroom. There was a lady over here somewhere. I don't know. But they've never been, it's never been bad. I really think they protect the house.
I think they're just like.
Well, it sounds to me like it was a party house at some point in life, which is a nice thing. People just want to come back and they want to have dinner in there and they want to hang out.
Because we're around the Manson, you know, like we're around that. Oh, yeah. I'm wondering if it was like.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's interesting though, because I love that bathroom. But I do have there is an energy in that bathroom and I never really knew what it was. I actually just,
maybe it's just good water pressure.
It might be that. Yeah. It actually might just be that. No, but it's really like, there's something romantic and like, kind of, you want to take a bath in there. You want to spend time in there. But it's also, there's a different energy in there. I don't know. Hmm. I've always felt that though.
So then your husband moves into the house with you, right?
Well, we were together for 10 years before we lived together. So
they just recently got married, you know.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. We were together for 19 years before we got married. And yeah.
So he moves in. So I'm always curious about when like a male moves into their wife's home, right? Even though it's now both your homes. Does he change anything, and how does that work out? Because he's got to put his stamp on it, right? Right,
Yeah. I mean, he didn't really change much in terms of the furniture, but he's a much better decorator than I am. Like, the dining room used to be blue. It was kind of like a Tiffany blue. He thought it would be better purple, so we made it purple. I mean, he's definitely changed. And then the kitchen, he was living here when I finally, if you remember the kitchen how it was before, it was a freaking disaster. And it was like that for so long. Anyway, so he was here to help like redo the whole kitchen and design it and pick the color and everything.
Yeah, because that's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know,
well, yeah, and she cooks, sure. Which you'll see soon.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
My mouth is watering like Wendy Williams right now.
Has he felt any like presence? Has he ever experienced anything?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he's ever seen anything or felt any, you know, kind of felt anything like that.
I can't believe
that. But yeah, there just is something. But I think it's, I think it's positive, whatever it is. It's just kind of an abiding mm-hmm. thing.
They're not mad you're here. They just want to be here too.
Yeah, which is, that's great. You know, I mean, I'm happy.
Yeah, but charge them rent.
I feel the same way about my dogs. A little bit.
All right, stop.
No, but they protect the house. They're annoying a little bit, but they also protect the house.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, because also I think criminals are superstitious and they feel it, the vibe, like anybody else. Because so many people, as they're walking in here, the first thing they say is, this place is haunted, or it's haunted.
What did I
haunted.
Say when we pulled up? I didn't even walk in the house. We pull up and I go, it's a haunted house.
You did. You said it's a haunted house. Is that the first thing
more than
he
half
said.
Of the people, that's what they say. So there, it has that feeling. The feeling so is there. Funny. It's no accident. And I feel like criminals, and I'll knock on wood here, but I feel like they are very more superstitious. And I feel like they look at it and they're like, no.
Nah, not that one.
Bad vibe. Yeah.
That's too much trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're going after like huge mansions and like, you know, with like Lamborghinis sitting outside. They know.
With open windows where they can see what's inside.
And they know, and they're stalking and watching when they're out of town and blah, blah, blah. This, they're like, ooh, I mean, I literally haunted. Was like, all right, let's do this.
Well, Well, the hills are a good place for crime. You know, there's not sure. cops driving by. It's just you're kind of up in here, you know. So, you know, you might want the Lamborghini house, but it's on Doheny or whatever. Right. You know, here you're just kind of... And we know, I mean, there was tons of crime up here. The Wonderland murders were right there on Wonderland. And,
right. Ooh.
There is a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of crazy sordid history in
I used
hills.
To come up here all the time because Adam Duritz used to live from Counting Crows. He used to live in this neighborhood. And he wrote that album, the Canyon song, whatever. And so we used to come, have parties here all the time. And his house was like... very much like this, but you know, haunted. It was just weird. All these houses are what, built in the 30s, you think? Most of them?
Yeah, range.
The originals?
Yeah, I mean, it became a neighborhood, like an actual neighborhood for the first time, I think in the 20s, where people would build like their country house here. You know, they were doing, I guess, kind of an East Coast thing of, you know, you live down on Pico near the studio and then you have your country house up here in the hills.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
And that's what, you know, so people were buying these, you know, whatever, these plots for their country house. So
is there a way to find out the history of the home? Is there like a, is there a microfiche?
There probably is. My brother-in-law found something and he sent it to me, which was pretty cool. But yeah, there's if you look, there's
I'd love to know, like for my house, for instance, I know it was built in 55, but there, I always, because of that back, there were two living rooms and that back living room, remember, was like patioed. And I always thought that it was probably like an open air or like a just a covered patio situation.
Lanai.
Yeah. And I would just 50s. Have loved to know what it used to look like, you know, for real. Cause all of the walls, it's such a, I mean, now that we're redoing it, the contractor literally said to me the other day, he's like, you know, your house grades at like a 17.8%. It just goes like, it's not in a straight line. It grades slightly the way that's built on the hill.
Mm.
So it's very difficult to build on because none of the walls are straight. Oh, they're God. All angled.
No.
So it's kind of a nightmare.
You would never know from looking at it, though.
No.
It's such a, I mean, it and grades, your view is incredible.
Yeah.
Like to one side?
Mm-hmm. So the whole house is just slightly like tilted. And you would never know when you walk in. It looks like all the walls are straight, but they're actually all slightly wow. off. So each wall, like when you go to hang like cabinets or whatever, it's very hard to get them straight.
Oh, no. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Now, you've had your house for a really long time.
Yeah, I bought mine not long after you bought yours. I mean, 2001. So,
how old are you?
22 maybe.
Yeah.
I rented for a little while. My mother was also not happy with me buying my house.
She's happy now. I mean, that was
she's
an
happy
investment.
Now, that's and an I'm investment. Happy now. But yeah, now with the way the market is, who, I mean,
well, it's so funny
that.
Because half my friends that moved out here during the Northridge quake, like my friend Albert, who was on the podcast, he had his house in Toluca Lake. His chimney fell into the house.
And then he left. He like,
just
can't
moved.
Deal.
He left. He left. He's like, I'm out. What is that?
Was that a ghost?
Was that a ghost?
Sorry. No, I think it was Guy upstairs. Sorry about
that's
that.
All right.
But if it is a ghost.
Maybe it was a ghost. I don't know.
Come out. We'd like to interview you.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about yeah. what's everything that's
okay,
going on.
So we got to get into the scandal of the world.
Yeah. But there's a lot of crime thing. First of all, let's talk about OJ real quick.
Okay. Let's do a recap on OJ.
Let's do a recap because he's out and about.
You can't recap OJ enough times.
He's
no.
out and about.
To
he's
me.
Been drinking. Yeah. I heard last he got kicked out of the Cosmopolitan. I need to know the law on this. Apparently, he's on probation.
Wait, got kicked out for drinking because he was drunk?
He was belligerent, and apparently they kicked him out of the Cosmopolitan.
That's to get kicked out, I feel like to get kicked out of a casino for drinking is like, you got to really be
You
got to
be, yeah, I would think.
I mean, it was
not,
like a
I mean I've never
like
been
TMZ
kicked out
thing.
For drinking.
I've never been kicked
yet.
Out for drinking.
It's a goal.
Yet. Maybe you can look that up.
It's a goal, but...
but...
Okay. So,
but I thought there was a law that while he's under probation that he can only have 0.08 as like a even as of booze, no matter if he's driving or not. But
you heard that somewhere that's one of the terms.
I heard that's one of the terms. That's what I heard.
I mean, he wouldn't be on probation, right? He would be on parole.
I don't know the difference.
Right. Probation is when you've been convicted, maybe you do some jail time or maybe you don't, but then you're on probation with the court for a certain period of time where there's a certain amount of supervision and oversight of you during that term of your probation. When they let you out of prison, you're on parole, you know, so it's different. So it's more of, there's still supervision and there's all that kind of stuff, but it's different from being on probation. It's more formal, actually. There should be more supervision when you're on parole than there even is on probation. And then the threat is always like, if you're not a successful parolee, they can send you back for whatever the term of your parole is, you know, where there's that danger that they could send you back.
I mean, what do you think he could, if he honestly did something, he'd have to basically do, he'd have to commit a pretty major, like, stealing, some kind of armed robbery.
I don't think he's gonna do like that, but.
No, to go back.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. He will end up back in jail. I don't know why, but he's going to screw something up for sure.
What are you going to say, Stephen?
Oh, I was just going to say, well, the headline for this article is "The Juice Got Loose at a Vegas Hotel." and he's banned from the Cosmopolitan Hotel.
Ooh.
And they're just saying he's claiming nothing happened. But they were saying that glasses were broken and he was escorted out by security. So, but he's saying nothing happened.
Right. Well, right.
So that's all for now. For now. Developing.
My
still
point
developing.
Is he's out and about in Vegas. Like, why the judge made him stay in Vegas is beyond me. Because that's another part of his
The deal.
Parole. I mean, California has that. I don't know the law in Nevada at all, but it's the interstate compact, which means that the case of probation, one of the terms would be you can't leave the state unless you notify your, you know, your PO and you get approval for that or you get permission. For parole, I can imagine that being a term because
they want to keep tabs on you.
Well, yeah, because you're supposed to be being supervised. So you could Got just it. Be like, peace, you know, and then take off and just basically avoid all that supervision by leaving the state. You know what I mean? So
right. They keep the term for whatever it is, a couple of years.
Vegas ain't the place, is what I'm saying for OJ.
Does he have to stay in Vegas or does he have to
stay in Nevada?
Okay, yeah, sure. So he doesn't have to be
in
Vegas.
Well, of course.
Right,
but he doesn't
have to be the Cosmopolitan.
But he's
not going to
be. We're in Nevada.
You know, Pahrump. I don't know. There's a lot of places in Vegas.
Here's my dream for OJ. Okay, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
I would love OJ to move to Florida, back to Florida.
Okay.
And to meet Casey Anthony.
Oh, God.
And start dating. No. And then have them get married. And
gross.
I'm just thinking, they deserve each other. Is that wrong?
Yes. Well, I mean, probably. Definitely don't procreate. That's all I'm asking.
Well, I'm not saying. I'm just letting you know. That's okay. What I
so you're going to set them up.
I would set them up in a heartbeat. Okay.
I want to talk because this has been it's just so in the news and I feel like every single day I wake up and there's another report of someone acting inappropriately and being pointed out. Obviously, the Harvey Weinstein scandal has broken. The dam has broken. I actually felt like, and I talked about this last night with Brandon because he mentioned the Cosby thing. He's like, so it's interesting to me that all those women came forward and yet it took the Harvey Weinstein scandal to make any of the other ones seem relevant. And I agreed with him actually, but I think that is it the statute of limitations? Like, what is it that made the Harvey Weinstein thing feels like we drew a line in the sand of how we're going to treat people that are accused now? Am I wrong about that?
I think it's a little different. I think, and I'm saying it's different because, not because it's as equally, it's not as equally bad as, you know, what right. Cosby did. I think what it is that Harvey is constantly in the media for his Oscar winning movies and he's always, I mean,
he's more relevant and more powerful in
it's
today's
more relevant,
age.
More powerful. Cosby is an icon in the culture of television, of being, of like setting a standard for family, and it was harder for people to embrace it, if that makes any sense. Like, okay. It took a lot of women to come out for them to go, okay, this guy, something's bad. Like Cosby is, for me, my opinion, it's
and obviously, because he's older now,
and he's older, and it's hard like, to prosecute and he's someone who's old. I can't hear and see, and the whole yeah.
And it was still a hung jury, in his
which
still,
is right,
which is case. Crazy to me.
Right, Harvey Weinstein is notorious for being an animal in the boardroom. To you know, that's he's just notorious for that. So. And you also have to look at his wife is gorgeous. She's beautiful. She's younger. Why would he do that? It's a power thing. So it turns into a whole different kind of scandal. That's just my opinion.
Well, no. And I think you're probably right. I'm curious about all of it. I will say this. Of all the major people, and there are some smaller players that I didn't know certain managers or certain agents well, but of all the major players that have now been outed, Harvey Weinstein, Brett Ratner, Louis C.K., Kevin Spacey, none of these people, in my knowledge, I have heard rumors about all of these people in these capacities for years.
Oh,
yeah.
So, like, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a little bit of that going on. I mean, nobody in the Hollywood circle, we all knew Kevin Spacey was gay, certainly. There was a rumor that he liked young boys, certainly. Did I know that he hit on somebody when they were 14? No, not for certain. But could it be probably insinuated? I guess. I mean, I'm not surprised by any of it. And the fact that people like Brett Ratner go to the point of actually saying that they didn't do it is laughable because we all know you did it. Like, even I, who was never approached by him, there's no way that somebody who hears a rumor for 10 years, there's no way your name is the rat in industry circles and you didn't do any of this shit. There's no way. And the Ellen Page story makes me sick to my stomach. The fact that he, like, came down on her because of her for being gay and basically outed her to an entire crew is horrifying. It's horrifying on so many levels.
And yet,
I had to get that out.
It's funny that the industry has the reaction that they're having because
they're all so surprised and like scared.
And
are
now
you
it's
kidding?
Like, oh, cancel all of Louis C.K.'s stuff.
Because that'll make it better.
Terminate all of, Kevin Spacey's stuff. But it's like, wait, but you're, hold on. So you want to distance yourself so much from this and you need to publicly go on record that you're, taking a stand or having a reaction. So you're terminating your relationship with these people. You're terminating their project. But these are the same people who knew that this shit was happening
forever
and did nothing.
Like, if I had an idea, close to any of these people's projects,
right.
Don't you think they did?
Yeah, but the hypocrisy amazing.
They're also helping hide it.
Yes.
Obviously.
It's hypocritical.
But that's my point. Okay, cause this is where I freak out a little bit, and people are going to hate me for saying this.
Here we go.
Because, I grew up in the All in the Family days, and I miss the non-PC
world.
I do. Like, it's too much for me. I'm like, I'm scared to say anything, anywhere. I'm trying to figure out where the art is separated from the scandal.
Yeah, that's always okay. It's like that famous article. It's called Mad at Miles, and it's about, and I can't remember the name of this scholar who wrote this, but she's talking about that problem. And it was about knowing that Miles Davis was a wife beater and knowing mm-hmm. this, but then, so what do? You love the guy's art, but he's a monster.
How do you reconcile
what's the answer
that in your brain?
To that? And yeah. I guess we've had that, Al Green, I mean, all these people that we've known, all kinds of stuff about, and then, yeah, where do you embrace the one, love the sinner, hate the sin. I don't know.
Pearl Cleage, I think is how you say
yes,
her last name.
Very good, Stephen. That was very quick.
Thank you, Stephen.
Tommy's staying on
excellent.
Top of it.
By the way, I'm starstruck that the Stephen Ray Morris is in my house right now.
Oh,
after
everyone's
doing that last episode,
Stephen.
I had never heard of My Favorite Murder. Since then, became, a
murder file.
Have heard every single episode as I've heard every single episode of your show. And now I'm like, Stephen! And, they're just, that's my, well, I love that on their show when they're like, Stephen!
I'm blushing.
Cut that out,
Stephen.
And then You know, there
Steven's
was just
very beet red do. Right yeah, now. He's beet red, he's FYI, like, guys. And Stacey then Keenan just fanned out over Stephen Ray Morrison. He is like, well, can't handle it.
And then I don't know if you heard the last episode. They were in Anaheim doing a live show,
yeah.
And they introduced, it was the Grove of Anaheim or whatever. And they're like, and you know, Stephen Ray Morrison. And this crowd was like, ah! I mean, it was like, really? The old, yeah, like, you know, when the Beatles deal, were on Ed Sullivan. It was
this
crazy.
This is going to fucking make me nuts. I mean,
to be fair, I mean, it was amazing, but also that's where I grew up, so I feel like that felt extra sweet. I feel like that was really nice of them.
Get back to the research,
Steven. Yeah.
Steven, come on. But there have been other live shows in other locations, and this crowd is just like, ah! And then there's, I don't know if you know, do you two even know this? There's like Steven t-shirts.
Yes.
There's all kinds
what?
Of stuff.
Someone,
yes.
Yeah, someone actually.
With his mustache and his hair.
Yes. And someone just said to me, I think I was on set the other day, they're like, oh, I just listened to your podcast. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I didn't know Steven Ray Morris does your podcast too.
Wait,
and I was like,
what?
He's so famous.
Thank you. Yes, he does. Yeah, I know. Steven's the real famous one in it. It's fine. Well, I know you just want to hear more of him. It's all right.
Well, my friend Sammy's directing season two, yeah, which I didn't know until a picture on Instagram.
This is so crazy. So in season two of Hollywood Darlings, Sammy, who's so amazing, she's been directing all of our episodes, and we are so thankful and lucky to have her.
She's so
a
good.
Genius, and she's so good. And then they made the connection. They went to college together.
Yeah, the last student film I ever worked on was one of hers, where we went out to Joshua Tree for 2 days, slept out in the desert, and were like making a movie with like a race car or like a hot rod kind of thing out in the desert.
Were you doing the sound for it?
Yes, I was doing the
Amazing.
Sound for it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
See what happens?
Again, the world is so small.
So can
small.
We go back to why Steven's so famous?
No.
Okay.
He's because, not doing our live show then.
Oh, oh no.
Yes, he will, and he'll be on stage.
Live show. You want him to do the live show. People will be so excited to see him live.
You might actually need to be backstage
in real life, and the hair.
Yeah. If you can run sound a lot, that'd be amazing. Steven, I would love to have you on stage with me.
I'll order you a Steven t-shirt.
I need a Steven t-shirt. I had no idea. Why don't we have t-shirts?
Yeah, why don't we?
Oh, there's
we should get some t-shirts.
Very good on the merch over there at My Favorite Murder.
We got
Anna.
We got to get on this. All right. Okay, let's get back to people being gross.
Well, and our episode, our last one, was very kind of prescient on that. We were talking, you know, you yes. had been talking about the date that you don't know is a date because
right.
You think it's a meeting.
Right.
Right.
And then I had my story about yes. that exact thing.
And like, is that a hashtag me too? Or is that like bordering on it?
See,
I mean, obviously I wasn't groped, but I went into it thinking it was one thing as you did. And then I feel like, adversely affected career-wise when I did not reciprocate
yeah.
that feeling. And I'll just say that on one of these so-called quasi-dates that I didn't realize was a date, now that person is dating somebody else and that person is on a lot of this guy's shows. So maybe it works for him in that regard. Right. So, but, yeah, it makes me feel like...
But, like, for a guy, it's different. Like, for instance, and I'm just going to say it out loud because I don't care. When we had Andy Dick, when we did Andy Dick's podcast and I went in the bathroom, he groped me.
What?
Yes. I told you that.
No, you did not tell me that.
He was doing it in jest and I got it and I was like, I'm like, dude, no. And he's like, you know, and he's being all jokey-jokey. I was like, he just fucking groped me. But I was like, whatever, you know.
Gross.
But I didn't take it... I know it sounds horrible, but I was just like...
He also pulled his dick out for... So, I mean, I'm sorry, but she...
Yeah.
This is now my new thing. What is it with men who just want to pull their dicks out and start masturbating on things? Like, why? No one wants to see it. It's disgusting. Like, it makes no sense. Why are you masturbating on a plant? None of it. It's all a power thing. It has nothing to do with the sexuality. It has to all do with the power and the fact that, hey, I can do this in front of you and you won't say anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even stranger, you know, when it, you know, it's some strange guy. I mean, that has probably happened to you. It is a crime. It's a 314, right. But I was like, oh, wow. I've been 314'd multiple times.
Where
I
they like
know this.
Catcall you or?
No, where they are masturbating.
Yeah.
In public.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big. Oh, yeah. Like.
Yeah. I mean, it happened to me in Germany when I was walking with Allison Mack, which we'll get to next.
Aha.
I was walking under a bridge in Germany. And we were going to a train. It was very early in the morning. And this, like, odd character starts walking up close to us. and is masturbating, and then and as I realize, as he gets close to us, he's masturbating, and then he like basically grabbed me, like tried to grope me, and I said something like fuck you," and like ran away. But yeah, I mean, he was like a homeless crazy man, but that. Hello, he basically did what a lot of these other people are doing in their offices.
Listen, the best thing that could happen out of this whole thing is that now, and I'm saying this specifically to women, it's, you guys, it's, you're the voice is out, and it's, it's like, it's never going to be like this ever again, you know what I mean? Like, you're, this is the chance to like really, really push the envelope.
Well, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying it's a great thing. It's it's finally women are being heard. You know, it took this craziness because it happened in Hollywood.
This long.
But and I'm talking about other corporations and businesses and lifestyles.
Tippi Hedren came out against, like, I mean, she was basically saying, like, oh, dear God, thank God people are finally saying things. Right. I mean, back in the day of Hitchcock, we couldn't say a word. How many years has it taken of this gone on for someone to actually make a difference and it not ruin your career? Because it's ruined so many people's careers. And the thing that's different about, in my opinion, the thing that's different about the career that we are in entertainment and a lot of other corporate careers, and you can disagree with me on this, and I'm sure, you know, it happens in all businesses. But the difference with this one is that it's so specific. So if you ruin a relationship with the wrong person, you're fucking done. That's it. There is no in for you anywhere. It's not like you can go to a different law firm. You can change states and go work for a different branch of the company. That's it. You're done.
Yeah, but what's strange about the whole thing is that the reason it got attention was dependent on the alphabet of the star. In other words,
absolutely.
If it was a C-listed star, it really... No one, don't worry about it. If it was a B-listed star, don't worry about it.
It took a lot of A-list stars.
When the A-list stars came out, all of a sudden, like, explosion. You know?
Unfortunately.
And it's one after. No, listen, I guarantee you, and we don't know when this is going to air, but I'm telling you, in the next months, we're going to hear, it's the best time to become an executive in Hollywood, I think. I think this is the best time, I swear to God.
So disgusting.
I'm like, if you're a low-power producer or whatever, this is your time to like really move up in the...
Because so many people are literally being fired.
They're going to be cleaning house. It's just what's going to happen.
Oh, God, there's something new that just happened right now. What is it?
And New York Times just put together a timeline of everybody that's been basically just been named in the last like month, just in October.
So I'm friends with Jessica Barth, who I've known for years. She came out against Harvey Weinstein. She was the one that Seth MacFarlane wrote the joke about that was in the Oscars, like saying that none of these women had to pretend to be attracted to Harvey anymore. Right. That was about her story. And she had told him, and you know, Seth is always up for a satire and has basically been satirizing people for years, Brett Ratner included, on his TV show. So I saw her recently, and now this other thing came out against this manager that essentially drugged her and sexually assaulted her. And I was like, I had no idea. I can't believe you've had to hide this. She's been sitting on that story for 5 years because no one would listen to her and basically told her to just let it go because she wasn't maybe a big enough voice or it would ruin so many things about her career or she was on a trajectory or whatever it is. And that it's like those people that it makes me so crazy for, you know, the people who are sitting there like waiting to just tell this story and are trying to move around it. It makes me crazy for everyone, obviously, but, I'm just, I don't know. I'm happy that it's finally all starting now. And the thing that also makes me nuts is the people who are like in the executive position now, they're like, we're just on pins and needles. We just don't know what to do. I'll tell you what to do. Tell your clients to stop being raging assholes. I'll tell you that. That's all you have to do is be a normal person, really.
How crazy is it that they're like...
I don't feel bad for anybody who's an asshole. If you did it,
No.
You did it.
But how crazy is it? I mean, let's just put it in perspective. House of Cards... Huge, huge show.
And I love that show. And huge it makes it very difficult.
Right?
I mean, I knew the rumors about him, but now that I know what really transpired, now that's a totally legally different thing.
Right.
I mean, groping a woman who's 25 is horrible. And also going up, you know, and groping a child, that's like a completely different level of horrific. So that's... it puts a whole new taint on the entire situation.
Well, I felt bad after the whole thing, believe it or not, for Corey Feldman.
I feel terrible for Corey Feldman.
Because
I feel
I
like nobody
like,
listened to Corey Feldman for
he's
years.
He's been preaching it for decades.
He said it for decades.
And we've been ignoring it, thinking that he was just a drug addict. And I mean, that's my honest, you know.
You're
I saw him on the
right.
talk shows. I saw, you know, he tells a story and then he does a weird, crazy song, you know, and then you're like, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
but I literally, the first person that popped up, I was like, oh my God, Corey Feldman. Like, horrible. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to commit a crime, sex crimes are just the best because the victim is going to want to think or feel like this never happened and deny that it ever happened for a good long time, oftentimes until the evidence is all gone and the statute has run. And then, so A, it never happened. And B, if it did, it was my fault. And I mean, what other crime? I mean, who, you know, you get your car broken into and your wallet stolen. You don't say this never happened. And if it did, it was my fault. And right. I mean, it's just of all of the types of crime, it's just people, you know, victims just internalize it in a, just a totally
it's
different
an emotional crime as much
way.
As it is. Yeah.
Have you seen it in the courtroom? Like,
yeah.
So how is it in the courtroom with the judge and how, or I don't know if it's a jury trial or whatever, if it's just with the judge, but most times out of those cases, how are they usually ruled? Like, what kind of evidence do you need? Like, what is, like, how do you prove that?
Well, it depends. I mean, it's if you have something like, you know, child molestation or something that happens over a very long period of time. I mean, it's almost always a he said, she said. It's, you know, these are not crimes that happen in public. It's behind closed doors. And it's most oftentimes, well, in a case like that, like a child molestation, maybe it was reported late. So then it raises the issue of like, oh yeah, well, if this happened, says defense attorney, why didn't you tell anybody for all of the first years, you know, for all this time? And then you probably don't have physical evidence if you're talking about child molestation that happened over years. And now the person reports for the first time when they're in their early 20s and the last time it happened was years ago. And now, you know, so there's not going to be physical evidence. So then it just comes down to, does the jury believe this victim, you know, and secondly, what's in it for them? But that's going to be a big defense strategy is now there's some kind of axe to grind for some other reason. Mm-hmm. You know, there was some, you know, whatever, this is the uncle and now there's been some falling out and the niece is mad at the uncle. So now she's going to make up this story or whatever it is. But I think a lot of times it comes down to the specificity of things. It's these certain acts or behaviors or just this scenario of where they were and what went on and what he said and what he did that is so specific that it's like, how could somebody make that up?
Well, and when it's the same story over and over and over, this person masturbated in front of me. This person masturbated in front of me on a plant.
Right.
This person asked if they could masturbate in front of me. I said no. They did it anyway. You know, it's like that's a very specific thing.
Yeah, it's an MO. It's an MO that emerges.
Or like I wanted this person invited me up to their hotel room and wanted a massage.
Yeah,
like,
the massage.
That's a very
like, watch
specific.
Watch me in the shower. Yeah.
Right. And then now we're like dealing with like the Alabama senator or congressman with Moore.
Yes. Tom?
I don't
Roy?
Know. Listen, I haven't been to Alabama in years.
That's disgusting.
No, Alabama's a nice state.
No, I'm not saying Alabama. I was saying the scenario.
Yeah, like now that person came out and they were, you know, and I don't know if the statute's like each state's different. The statute of limitations.
Yeah, different states will have different statutes of limitations. But I mean, I think in a lot of places they've been broadened or lengthened because of this understanding that people do keep, you know, either are in denial about it or just want to think that it didn't happen or that the rape that they just call in their mind bad sex. And it takes someone being like, when you're continuously saying no and trying to push someone away and they have sex with you anyway, that's actually not bad sex. That's something else.
Or especially when you're a child and you have no way of deciphering what actually happened until you're much older and maybe it finally comes out in therapy or with a partner
recovered
or whatever
memories
it is.
And all this kind of stuff. So the statute, I think in a lot of places has been extended to recognize that, but then...
But like they're saying that like he still might win.
Who, like Bill Cosby?
No, the Moore, because he's up.
Yeah, Roy Moore.
Roy Moore, because he's up for, is it senator? Is he Senate?
Or yeah, Senate candidate.
Yeah, so for Alabama, he's been there 4 years, I think, already. And they're saying, like, they did a poll and they're like, well, I guess legally a 16-year-old can have consent there in Alabama.
Right. So different states have different ages of consent, right, too.
So they're like, well, what's a couple of years? Like, it's like crazy talk over there. Well, it's like, I mean, that's like it's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
We had somebody who made comments about this very thing, and what happened to him was he got elected president. So I don't, you know, we're not that.
Hello.
We're not that upended, I guess. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't.
My point is, it's not just in Hollywood. It's everywhere.
Nope, it's everywhere. Yeah. It is everywhere. You're absolutely right. I think it's getting blown up in Hollywood because there's the medium for people who want to speak out and who have the platform to speak out to do so. And I think that it's great that it's being spoken about. And I don't think that it doesn't. I'm not saying it doesn't happen in other realms. It definitely does. And I hope this opens a door for other victims to be able to speak out in a genuine manner and for it to do something. Because even in our own U.S. politics, people are apparently, they can say whatever they want and basically admit that they just grope women and grab them by whatever they want, and that doesn't make a difference. And that's not okay. It's not okay in any way, shape, or form. And I don't like that it's being treated differently. So Louis C.K. is suddenly like, oh, he has everything gone. And no, we're cutting all the ties with him. And this
he
is not
came
okay.
Out and he came out and...
I at least appreciate that he admitted it.
He admitted it.
Good. You should. Go get some help. Yeah. See you later. Bye-bye.
That's a weird thing to do.
Actually, it's not. Because if you think about it, it's a waterfall. Like, everybody's getting outed now.
No, I'm not talking about admitting it. I'm talking about the actual, what he did to the women.
Oh, no, that's weird. Yeah, that's weird.
I'm like going, you're Louis C.K.
Admitting it is the best thing he could do at this point.
I know. I was like, you're Louis C.K.
Just admit it and try to move on.
Yeah.
And get some help.
Weird fetish or something.
It's a weird fetish.
I mean, at least in his case, it appears as though everyone was adults, and it doesn't seem like there was as much of a power differential as there was with Harvey Weinstein. They were fellow comedians. I mean, there was one woman, I think, in his case, who was an intern that has that kind of power imbalance when they're on a set, and he's probably, I don't know, the star, but he's at least,
yes,
you know, I mean, there is going to be some power differential between an intern and one of the actors, but everyone else, I mean, what, it's all shades of shit.
Yeah.
You know,
basically.
Just, yeah. But
can you imagine? I just like I'm thinking about the physicality of it. Like, as a woman, if I was like, Steven came into my house and I was like, like, masturbating, I was like, Steven, like, I can't even put my mind there. No. It sounds so ridiculous.
In his stand-up,
to me,
he makes so much fun of his own body. Like, I was trying to understand this psychologically about him,
which is an awful image for you to
have. He makes fun of himself. He makes fun of his body.
Yes.
I mean, he has
the other side of it.
Yes. Like, in his stand-up, he has this one bit, and I don't remember which, like, from what year this was or what special or whatever it was, but how he's talking about how he will usually have the woman on top because for him to be on top, he's like, well, I mean, it would be unfair, like that kind of thing. Like he jokes about that. And then he has other jokes that just talk about like, oh God, you know, this body and yuck. And so then of all the people to be doing that particular thing where you're kind of exposing yourself and you're doing this thing, I was like, I this is such a psychological backbend. I can't,
totally.
I'm like completely contorted by this whole thing.
I feel the same way. And yet I had heard rumors.
I had never heard rumors.
I hadn't either.
I had heard that he wasn't so great. It's just I want to get on to Allison Mack.
Did you hear about this, by the way?
Well, I hadn't until Lakeskins over here texted me a link.
Now, granted, it's
heard.
The Daily Mail.
Yes,
I get that.
There's
okay,
that.
So let's put that up front.
Yes, of course. It's all alleged.
Is that right? Alleged.
It's all alleged. But I will give you the information that I know from a personal standpoint. So, I was friends with her from the time, from acting class, back in the day.
We were in acting class together.
We were all in acting class together, 15, 16 years old. I guest starred on the pilot and another episode of Opposite Sex, which she did with Milo Ventimiglia.
Yep.
And Chris Evans, among others. Anyway, then Ellison from that point went on to do Smallville. Well, she and I were really close during that time. So
went
I think
to Paris during that time.
Yeah, I went think to Paris I was maybe 19, 20.
Yeah.
And then we went to, I took her on a trip to Europe with me. We went to Prague and Copenhagen and all kinds of places. It was just her and I until we got to Paris and we met up with you. And we had a whole Paris adventure.
We had a Paris adventure.
And then she went home and I continued on my journey. Anyway, she was like a little sister to me and I knew her for several years. She lived with my ex-boyfriend, Jeff. She was roommates with him and my friend Frank for years.
I didn't know that they lived together.
Yeah. So Allison moved to LA when she was 16.
Oh, that's right.
She was legally emancipated.
Right.
So at the age of 16, she moved from Orange County. She'd been working as an actress for many years. She got this job on Opposite Sex, which is a CW show, and she was living on her own, quote unquote, at 16. With my ex-boyfriend, well, at the time, my boyfriend, Jeff, and his roommate. Jeff Judé and his roommate, Frank. And they were, I mean, you couldn't live with better guys. They were the nicest, like, Frank was, like, the most Christian guy, like, a very tame group of dudes to live with. However, let that raise a red flag.
Raise
living
it.
On your own at 16. Sorry, there's a, in my opinion, that's very young to be on your own. And that being said, she was always young emotionally.
Wait, hold on a second.
Put it that way.
It's not like she moved from like Canada.
No, it was Orange County.
Okay,
it was an hour and a half away.
Thank you. Right. Not even. All right, go ahead.
I'm just going to say her family was not very involved in her life.
I understand that, but it's not like she moved like, you're making it sound like she moved to like.
No. It wasn't cross country or anything.
All right, thank you.
Anyway. So she's living in L.A., et cetera, et cetera. We go on our trip. She was involved with some, I don't know, rock and roller at the time. She was just very, like, into whatever guy she was dating. And he was sort of like a druggie, and we were trying to get her away from him. And we tried to have an intervention with her that went horribly awry. By the way, never have an intervention when you've been drinking. Try to have an intervention with someone you yourself have been drinking.
You had to have an intervention with her or with the boyfriend?
Myself and my friend, Alex, we're at a party and we were like, I just feel like this guy's a bad influence on her. He's a druggie and we should just tell her. And I was like, yes, we should tell her. And we've been having a lot of wine. Don't intervene in someone's life when you yourself are drunk. It doesn't work out, guys.
That's probably the number one rule.
Worst intervention ever.
Interventionist rule number one. Don't be faded.
Yes, we were at a party of all things. We like drug her in the back room. We were like, we need to talk to you. Because this is not going well for you.
And is the guy there?
No.
Oh, okay.
He was not there, but it did not go well. And it basically,
I remember
like
that guy that she was
slow
dating.
Slow dissolve into the end of our friendship after that. I mean, geez, I wonder why. But anyway. So years after that, she went off to do Smallville. And we sort of repaired the relationship. I saw her a couple times.
Yeah, because she had to move to Canada. Because Smallville, moved to
It was Vancouver. And it was several years, many years. So Frank, my old friend, was still in contact with her. And the two of them ended up going into business together. They bought commercial real estate. I think she mostly bought it. And he decided to go in with her and help manage it. Then the recession hit. And things went really badly financially for them. Even though they owned several buildings in different parts of the country. During this time, she got involved with a group called ESP. Which I thought sounded like some kind of fake, made up, sort of extraterrestrial. I don't know what it was. It was called Executive something. Especially important people. It sounded insane to me.
Something about it sounds familiar. Like maybe ESP there have been people around that have been involved in it or something.
Where was it? Where was it at? Out of?
I'm not sure. I know she was living in Vancouver at the time, but this is essentially what turned into Nexium, which is now what is in the news right now and what I want to get to the heart of the matter of talking about. So ESP was sort of like a come and we have groups for women and executives and we try to build you up and help your, you know, managerial skills, your professional skills. It was like workshops and you come and pay money to take these workshops with professionals who will help you lead you on to better success in life.
Is it kind of like the Forum?
It's very forum-y.
Maybe sounds like it could be borderline professional, like professional development, professional skills, but then you get there and you're like, oh my God, this shit is a cult.
Yep, pretty much. So She started in on this plan, and I'll have to have Frank come on the podcast and tell the story, because I talked to him today about it.
You did?
I did.
And?
Well, so she tried to bring him into it, and he, like, Frank is the most Christian guy you're ever going to meet.
She could bring me in, because I would go undercover.
All right. Well, not after this podcast, but okay.
Okay.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, I don't want to stop this story, but A, I need to turn on the oven. B, we're out of rosé. Can we just pause
yes,
it for
let's
one
pause
second?
It. And then we'll
pause
get it. Into Alison Mack next scene.
While Stacy gets us some more rosé, let's take a little break. And when I say break, I mean that's the end of part one with Stacy Keenan. Part two is December 1st after the Thanksgiving holidays. You can email us at worsteverpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at worsteverpc, Instagram worsteverpodcast. You can find Christine Lakin at Yo Lakin. You can find me, Alaa Khaled, at Alec Led. And you can find Stephen Ray Morris at Stephen Ray Morris. Have a great Thanksgiving. See you December 1st. Stacy Keenan, part 2.